Hello, this is Daniel Chalkin.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, Everything's Changing at Once. This week's show is sponsored by Fabric and Linode. All right, Manton, well, we are just in a luxurious recording situation right now compared to last week.
Wait, you're not in a hotel room?
I'm not in a hotel room.
In San Francisco?
On janky Wi-Fi with holding my mic propped up against a plank of plywood nailed to a wall, acting as an ersatz desk. No, I'm not.
Yeah. So that was the biggest surprise last week, is I didn't have a desk in my hotel room. Been a while since I've been in a hotel that didn't have a desk.
And that's kind of like, you've stepped off onto another like tier.
Yeah. Well, it's perfect. It's perfect because my goal was to save money this trip.
Right.
And
right.
I did. And turns out there's cost to saving money, including smaller room and the desk. So otherwise, no complaints from the hotel. But I had to sit on my bed. And I bought this attachment. It's actually kind of brilliant. I plan to use it for other stuff, and my son has ideas for it. You know, it's this weird tripod that like clamps to a desk and then has this long, twisty cable that then clips onto an iPhone. Mm. And it was perfect as like a microphone, since I was using my iPhone as a microphone. Turned out perfect.
Well, it didn't turn out perfect. The part that recorded turned out perfect.
Yeah, we lost the beginning of the recording. That was a software issue or a user error issue, not a hardware attached to the bedside table issue.
What's the name of this attachment you used?
I don't even know. It's something I found on Amazon. I don't really know what it's called. I can look it up and we can link it in the show notes. It is a really bizarre little attachment. So it's got this twisty, you know, cable thing that's maybe, I don't know, a few feet long, maybe a little more. And so it's handy if you want to mount your iPhone on something and then like point it in weird directions. So it'd be good for attaching to, a desk or a pole or a door. Mm-hmm. Or if you're doing like something like stop motion animation or something like that, where you'd want to like point the camera in kind of just an unusual angle, like so that a normal tripod wouldn't work. Yeah. It's kind of...
Is it like little flexible like balls, like beads? Almost?
No.
Okay. I have something similar from years ago like that. It was kind of like it was like a little tripod arms.
Right.
That would like wrap around something.
Yeah, like the GorillaPod.
That was it.
Yeah, but it's kind of... Yeah. The idea is kind of like that, but it's much, much longer, right? So it can stretch several feet instead of just like whatever.
Yeah, well, we had to improvise in many respects. I mean, we shouldn't complain too much because really our respective Wi-Fis held up. And that's saying something for me because I was like, my MacBook Pro was on a permanent mission to download the latest Xcode the whole week. Mm-hmm. And it was never succeeding. It was like, you know how Apple does that thing where if like, you get interrupted, it lets you resume the download. But then there's like, I don't know, once you've done that, there's like a 1% chance that the download's corrupted.
Mm-hmm.
And then every time you do it, it like adds another like 10% chance that the download's going to be corrupted. But, you know, I had my hotel Wi-Fi, which did all of its... It was like 15 kilobits per second. And then... I don't know how we recorded over it. It's just testament to the fact that when it comes down to it, audio doesn't take much. But you know, I kept coming back to my hotel after being out for the day and be like, oh, cool, another like 400 megabytes downloaded all day long. By the time it would finally get done, I would try to open it. And I was so excited I was going to use the new Xcode because, you know, that's the thing I was looking forward to the most, really, when it comes down to it. And it's like, you know, checksum, verifying checksum, fail.
Mm-hmm.
So I never ended up getting any of the goodies until I got home to Boston.
All that bandwidth wasted.
Yeah. I know, all that bandwidth. There is probably a bunch of other people trying in vain to get Xcode and iOS and macOS and all the good stuff. Mm-hmm. And we're all just like on the verge of getting it and canceling each other out.
Every hotel in San Francisco that week needs to set up their own like caching proxy, whatever,
right?
Whatever download server. That's
Apple
a thing,
should
right?
just get. Yeah, Apple should just bring a terabyte hard disk with all the goodies, to every hotel. Here it is. You're going to have nerds. Here it is.
So you are back and you have Xcode loaded up. What's, you know, this is the first time we've recorded since San Francisco. Any other last thoughts, like, from the conference? And, like, how are you feeling now? It feels like it's been more than a week, but it's just been a week since we were there.
Boy, yeah. I feel like it's sinking in a little bit. I've had the privilege now, of course, of listening to some other podcasts and some things I didn't really understand where they were going. Had a chance to read some stuff. Had a chance to watch a few developer sessions. But I still sort of feel like I'm in that blur of, like, what happened, you know? Mm-hmm. Here's the other thing. I'm going on another trip. So I've been, like, home for a few days just trying to, like, cram as much reaction to WWDC, as much, like, playing with the new stuff into my day as I can, while also acutely aware of the need to just, like, repack this suitcase and get back out the door. So it's kind of a bummer timing. I don't think I'll plan back-to-back trips with WWDC again.
What you need to do is you need to download iOS 10 from another hotel in another place wherever you're going. Just go around right. the country or the world downloading on bad Wi-Fi.
Well, here's the good news. Once I was back in my sweet Verizon Fios-laden home, I just downloaded everything. And so I'm actually running now. Joked with you before we started recording this. I'm recording this on macOS 10.12.
Nice.
So far, so good. We'll see if this becomes a recording that's just for me and Manton to hear, or if everybody else ends up hearing it.
Quick side note on the version. I can't believe they call it 10.12. They don't call it that, yeah. Really, but, like, I can't believe they didn't bump that past 10.
Just call it 12.
Or 11, either one. 12 would be fine.
Right, I see what you mean.
It doesn't, the fact, they dropped the X, so I don't understand why it's still stuck at 10, but.
Yeah, I guess they want to call it, I'm having a hard time picking up whether it's going to be more commonly called, like, macOS Sierra now.
Yeah, I think it has to be, yeah.
But I fell into the natural, like, just like psychological rut, which I think was drawing me to the most natural way of saying it, and it was macOS 12. And that felt mm-hmm. good to me.
Yeah.
It uses the number that, you know, is the significant portion. It is essentially macOS 10. If you just think of, like, everything that has ever been called macOS 10 and think of the product name as the macOS 10 part and the version as the dot part, then all history can be forgiven.
Yeah. I mean, it makes no sense, but... Right. But yeah, I mean, it's consistent with the last 15 years. The last 15 years were a huge mistake, versioning-wise, but it is consistent. It's just strange, because next year we're going to have iOS 11 and still macOS yeah. 10.13. Right. It makes no sense, but whatever. You know, I like Sierra. I like that it's called macOS. I can live with the lowercase. It's consistent. I can't complain too much.
Yeah. I guess macOS 10 is... well and truly gone now. I mean, as a product, we don't have we are rid of the problem of people being enlightened or otherwise about whether it's OS X or OS 10. From this point forward, yeah. there's no excuse, because it's all 10.
Yeah, there's no
and,
X.
Yeah, and I think that's you know it's not iOS X, thankfully. But yeah, you know, I was at first just like, I'm going to wait a while. You know, it's the dummy move to just download everything on the first developer release, and I'm going to lose data and have things broken. And I didn't lose too much, nothing too much broke. But you know, I'm kind of like, I say this every year, I'm kind of like an old hand at this, I guess. Old hat, I guess that's what you say. This is old hat for me, that's what you say. Because I used to always run all the, you know, crazy new stuff at Apple. The distinguishing difference, of course, was that I could if I found a bug, fix it myself or go like pound on somebody's door say, mm-hmm. what's going on here?
Another big difference in the old days, it seems like it was much more common to have multiple partitions on your Mac and install, yeah. you know, you install the betas on a separate partition so that you can always boot into the real one if things go wrong or if you need to do real work. That's not common anymore. And external drives, too. It's like, I mean, I almost never have an external drive plugged into my Mac. I have a, yeah. you know, a thing on the network that I can back up to and stuff like that, but not boot off of. And it's just, it seems much more common now to just say, you know what, if I'm going in on the new beta, I'm just going to install it over my default system and live with it. It doesn't seem very common to have separate partitions or external drives or which used to be, that was just the way you did it.
Yep.
Like no one would just install it. They would always install on a separate partition.
And I'm kind of like a weird hybrid version of the old me and the new me, I guess, the new old person approach and the new person approach, which is, of course I have backups. That's, I hope, a given. But then also I do have multiple partitions. The funny thing is though, I've been living for the past like 3 years off of this partition on my Mac called, quote, Edge, unquote.
Okay.
I actually literally called it Edge.
So at one point you put the bait on that, but yeah. then you liked it so much you just started living on that. And
yeah,
that, and there's that was an old like partition with like 10.5 or something, right?
Right. Yeah, let me see what it is. Macintosh HD, which is 10.9.4.
Okay.
And then... So I guess Edge has taken me through 10.10, 10.11, and now 10.12. And I wonder why I run into bugs. But no, I mean, I'm impressed that actually these days, I think it's sort of a testament to how well Apple handles the upgrade process in general that I've been able to go from presumably 10.10 to 10.12 on this thing. And before that, I had some similar behaviors in the past, but another key distinction, a key difference between my strategy and a lot of folks is I have a third partition, which is called data. And that's like my good stuff. You know, that's my home directory and anything I care about.
Oh,
and
okay.
So Edge and, you know, as it happens right now, it's funny that I just left this one called Macintosh HD. That's like real original. But so I have three partitions, and the idea is that if, you know, that's what gives me a little bit of bravado as well, because the idea is if things go really haywire, I can just start over with a new, I can switch first of all back to Macintosh HD, and that's pointing, I have a user account on there that's pointing at my same external drive, not external, right. Yeah, second partition.
Yeah.
Drive for my home directory. And that does start to get a little dicey with mm-hmm. how apps behave with your stuff. But
yeah.
Apple's stuff is pretty good about that, I think, because they know a bunch of their people inside are doing similar things.
Right. Okay, so you are still more or less acting, I mean, not with some differences, but still how I thought that people had kind of that it left that in the past. You're still operating in that.
You're saying I'm living in the past. Well, you can just say it.
No, I mean, not exactly. I mean, you know, there's pros and cons to any setup. There's no one setup that's right for everybody. Right. I have enjoyed over the last number of years not having that kind of complexity. And in fact, I kind of take it one step further, and I have basically, I try to have all data for everything that I could possibly have, like in one place. I'm not quite there. I have two places, like one drive with everything, and then one, and then Dropbox, which is almost everything.
Yeah.
But I've found over the years that if I don't have everything in one place, I lose things. You know, you buy a new machine, you upgrade things. Like, I hate having things scattered into multiple yeah. partitions, multiple external drives. I mean, I like having everything in one place. Everything in one place means that every time I upgrade something, everything comes along with it. So that's kind of been my strategy. That's why I haven't used partitions in forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's, and as you noticed, that my partitions, all but one of them is disposable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of key. The main exception over the years has been stuff that's just kind of annoying to reinstall, but it has to be on the install. volume, and there's less and less of that because, you know, it was stuff like when I needed to install like MySQL or something on, you know, the system to test something, or if I needed to install a different version of Apache or MAMP or, you know, anything from, you know, I'm forgetting the name, the homebrew, you know, all that stuff I'd have to redo every time I update. But as you know, Manton, more and more of that stuff I just handle with virtual machines now. So, you know, like the stuff we work on together with the jobs board is all nice, neatly, you know, cordoned off into a virtual Linux machine on my data folder, you know, on my data drive. Mm-hmm. So it's getting better. And then, of course, I do have the second Mac, the home server. So I have two places for my data. But
yeah,
the second Mac, the home server, is where I put my backups and everything that gets too big to keep on my main computer, because I still live the laptop lifestyle like you do.
Okay, this week we're happy to have Twitter back sponsoring the podcast to talk about Fabric. Fabric's suite of developer tools is completely free, and it includes a whole bunch of useful things. Of course, Crashlytics for tracking all your crashes. I've used this forever. Answers, which is kind of part of Crashlytics, but it's all about analytics, and they keep making this better. We've talked about the dashboard and how easy it is to kind of get a glance over your apps, like active users and crash-free users and different custom events you can hook in, so you can kind of track how people are using your app. And I just got an email from them today talking about an improvement to the dashboard, how you can get some of these custom events from your app and kind of like include them higher up into the dashboard, so at a glance you can see more like app specific information that's going on in your app. Just really useful and extremely well designed, and also beta testing and a whole set of other SDKs from third parties that you can add. So the Fabric suite is just kind of one place to add a bunch of different functionality.
And you know, there's a new functionality I discovered last week at WWDC, which is excellent breakfast burritos. Because I was privileged to go to Twitter's headquarters on Market Street in San Francisco for their keynote viewing party. Thanks, Twitter. Thanks, Fabric. That was awesome. I think there must have been a couple hundred of us. So nice. I'm sure that there's hundreds of developers who are not only grateful now for all the great stuff they get from Fabric, but also for that hospitality. And it was so nice to be able to be in a room full of people who are excited about, you know, the same Apple stuff, but, you know, also on some level excited about Twitter, because that's why they're there. So it was this great intersection of Twitter fans, Fabric fans, Apple fans. I don't think there was a lot of Android fans there in the room, but you never know with Fabric, because of course they support Android as well. It's just a great suite of services, and it's free. And there's so much stuff in this set of SDKs that it seems really unlikely to me that you won't find something in there that you can make great use of. And it's just backed by this group at Twitter that is really just focused on iterating on these tools and making them better and better. So we really appreciate support from Fabric, and we really think it's a great set of tools for just about any mobile developer to drop into their app and start adding lots of great functionality. So thanks again to Twitter and Fabric for sponsoring the show, and thanks for having me at that keynote viewing party. It was a great time, and you can learn more at fabric.io.
Okay, Daniel, well, we talked about macOS Sierra, and you've got it installed. I do not have it installed yet. In fact, I've only downloaded one thing, and that's the Xcode 8 beta. I am really wanting to use iOS 10 on my main phone, but I haven't yet. I really want to use watchOS 3.0 on my main and only watch, but I haven't yet, mostly because I'm at the middle, or actually the end, of shipping projects, and I just don't want to risk messing anything up right before shipping, especially with the watch. If I'm working on a watch app, I would love to test it with watchOS 3 and see if it's faster, but that's not going to help the fact that we have to support watchOS 2.2 when the app comes out. So I'm really resisting Sounds like you're all in, though. Have you actually installed iOS 10 on your iPhone and iPad and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah. I've got nothing old and busted here. I've got everything new and busted. And it's really, I have to say, my experience is it's really not that busted. So kudos to Apple for, I'm actually running iOS 10, macOS 10.12. Got to figure out how to say it.
Sierra.
And WatchOS 3. And Xcode 8.
Nice. Not tvOS? Oh my goodness.
Yeah, funny thing is, my family depends on that. So I may be a crazy man, but I know my priorities there. But I'll probably install that next week. I think I'm happy with all of this. There are some gotchas here and there, but the gotchas are so minor that it totally works for me as like I can live with this. Obviously, it's easier with something like Xcode, where you can just drop in Xcode 8 next to your Xcode 7 and run it. And if you don't like it or something doesn't work, you just quit and reopen Xcode 7.
Right. Sort of, though. Because the first thing I did is open my Swift project in Xcode 8. And it was like, freak out, upgrade everything to 3.0. And I said, no, I can't. You know, the Xcode 8 stuff I'm going to do is going to be Mac stuff. I just, Objective-C stuff. I feel like it's too risky right now, again, in the middle of projects with Swift, to really move anything significant forward there.
Well, this is another example, Manton, of where where I'm afforded the privilege of living on the seat of my pants because of this like distinction from the build server and the development server. So you have like a fear of running something in Xcode 8 because it's going to change the project. And you have the same thing. You can do the same thing I do, which is okay, open it in Xcode 8, see what it changes, and then just say like git revert everything, right?
Sure. But I'm not talking about the changing the project file itself, which actually I don't think it really does.
Yeah.
Every once in a while they'll change something, and that's true, but I don't think in this case it's true. In this case, I'm talking about Swift itself, trying to. You know, I mean, when you go to Xcode 8, correct me if I'm wrong, but you need to move to Swift 2.3 or 3.0, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I don't feel like I should do either of those things if I'm about to submit a 2.2 Swift project to the App Store. And if I upgrade to Swift 3.0, I mean, I can't just launch Xcode 7 and expect it to work. Yeah.
So that's a big move. But just on the point of Swift 2.3, Swift 2.3 is such a minor change from Swift 2.2 that I believe there are zero code differences, strictly speaking, between those two versions of Swift.
That's good.
The distinction that's important to make is that when you open up a project in Xcode 8, you will no longer have access to the OS 10 or iOS 9. You won't have the 10.11 or iOS 9 SDKs available anymore. So what people are running into, I think, and maybe misattributing sometimes to Swift is SDK changes that are you got to change all this stuff to accommodate the new setup. Mm-hmm. But so here's the bottom line is, I believe you can open up and allow Xcode to change your Swift project to 2.3. And maybe somebody will have some edge cases to let us know about where it does change the source code, but I believe all it really does is add a Swift version build setting to your project. Mm-hmm. That says Swift version equals 2.3.
Okay.
And the good news is that's a new build setting. So Xcode 7 doesn't notice that at all.
Okay.
So life goes on Xcode 7, and then it just comes down to whether you want to, if you do make any changes to your source code, like for instance to accommodate a new SDK change, then you have to make sure that's going to still work well in the old SDK on Xcode 7.
So is it possible to install old SDKs in Xcode 8 still? Because this isn't something most people ever deal with, but every once in a while, you do need to actually use an older SDK. The biggest example that I've run into over the years is I have a project that, believe it or not, still needs to link to some Carbon, like QuickDraw stuff, not Carbon, QuickDraw stuff, which went away after 10.6. And for years, I've been able to copy the 10.6 SDK into newer versions of Xcode, and it just picks it up, and you just select it from the pop-up menu. And it's a little bit of a hack, and you have to redo it every time you have a major Xcode upgrade. But I assume that still would be possible, right, if you wanted to have an older SDK in there, like 8 or 7?
Yeah, I haven't tried it myself. I feel like I've heard on Twitter that some people have done it successfully. The only reason I wouldn't conclude, just like assume that it's still possible, is because there have been apparently some other changes to Xcode to sort of ratchet down the security. Like for example, you can't run traditional Xcode plugins, which were never approved anyway, but they will not be picked up. And that's because Xcode 8 comes with the whole new Xcode application extension. Source editor extensions is the first and hopefully not last of the app extensions that they're supporting. And I saw something maybe on Twitter that in conjunction with that, maybe like that they added Xcode to the list of apps that's covered by system integrity protection.
Oh, okay.
And if that's the case, I don't know if you can just drop a new SDK in there.
Yeah, bummer.
But, you know, I mean, if it was really critical to somebody, they could always, I guess I shouldn't recommend this, but you can always still go back to the old days and boot without system integrity protection. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's other protections in Xcode, though, that like avoid loading SDKs. And it's also possible, I don't know enough about how system integrity protection works, but it's also possible that that SDK's folder within Xcode is just totally whitelisted and doesn't, you know, you can drop, you can still drop stuff in there.
That would be nice. I mean, they really should have better support for this. I know they want everyone to be on the latest SDK, and I understand that, but it's a very common, you know, case to want to have an older SDK lying around. They really should have better support for that.
Yeah, the problem, I think, in particular with Swift, and I sort of got, I picked up on this a little bit from a link on Twitter when I was complaining about some of this SDK-based stuff, and one of the developers from the Swift team actually just said, you know, Swift is strongly tied, the Swift version is strongly tied to the SDK version. And I'm not sure exactly what all the technical details are of that, or if that's a political decision. But it sounds like maybe all bets are off if you try to take like Swift 2.3 and compile against the iOS 9 SDK. And so it's not quite the same as it was in the old days where you could say, come on, this is just LLVM. It's just a C compiler. It's fine. It'll work. Maybe it will work, but it kind of sounds like they make assumptions, you know, to facilitate this kind of early evolving period of Swift. Mm-hmm. I think they make assumptions about what they can count on the SDK being for a particular version of Swift. Mm-hmm. So if you were going to like drop in an iOS 9 SDK into Xcode 8, you might also have to drop in a Swift 2.2 compiler.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, this makes this transition kind of unique in that everything is changing at once. And it can be a little frustrating because, yeah, you can't just say, oh, I want a little bit of this. I want the new Xcode. I want the new SDK, but I don't want this. Everything has to kind of go along for the ride. And I mean, we're definitely seeing that with the foundation changes in Swift 3. I mean, that just kind of underscores that, right? And that they're starting to blur the lines between what's in the SDK, what's in the compiler.
Yeah.
It does feel like you're fighting Apple a little bit if you don't just move along. With the direction they're going in.
I think it's definitely a time in history when, having Xcode 8 on your system, I think is valuable. I think everybody should do it. And if they can even only spare a little bit of time to start getting familiar with it and playing with it, but maybe it's the kind of thing you use for only your new projects and,
yeah. you know, that's the approach I'm taking. And there's also advantages just to have it and running it just for the simulator too. Like if you don't want to put iOS 10 on your phone quite yet, you can still play with the new features, or at least some of them,
right,
in the simulator. You can play with sticker packs. You can play with the new messages. I'm really happy that they have like a messages app in the simulator, like that you can actually use to chat back and forth.
I did not know that. That's
yeah,
cool.
And it's, so they have, when you launch the simulator for the first time for iOS 10, and you launch the messages app, I don't know if you can add, you can probably add other accounts, but it comes with like two like virtual users kind of, and then they chat between each other, right? And I don't actually know if this is hitting Apple server. I guess it must, but yeah, so you can send stickers and effects, and you can test all that stuff out just in the simulator, which is obviously great if you're developing a messages
right
app, but it's also great just to kind of play with.
Yeah, I mean, that's another example of just, I'm running with this Xcode, you know, this iOS 10 on my phone, and I keep noticing new things. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's new. I was like sending my wife a message, and I was like, oh, look at this. I can search for animated GIFs. And she's like, what are you doing? Because I was like, the behavior was not like me ever, right? Like I was just chatting with her normally. Like normally we have a perfectly civilized Apple Messages app from year 2015 experience. And then suddenly I'm sending her like a picture of a dancing goose or something. And I said something like, I'm sorry, I think I'm a millennial now. So
yeah, I think some of these are... I guess I'll warm up to them, but I don't expect to be using effects and confetti and everything in my messages. Stickers, too, even seem a little strange to me. Like, the fact that you can put I don't know how this is going to work in practice, if they're going to improve this, but, like, the fact that you can put a sticker, like, over text, like, anywhere in the chat, like, obscuring what people said, I don't know. I don't know about this. But it's fun, though. I mean, I wasn't planning on doing anything with messages, but then a couple of days ago, I was like, maybe I should do a little sticker pack. Maybe I should do something. I probably won't, but it's still, I think people will have a lot of fun with this.
There's a lot of opportunities here to have fun. And I think a good attitude for us old people is we still love these platforms. And here's what Apple is better at than we are, I guess, which is keeping these platforms attractive to young people. And that's how they keep the company viable, keep the platforms viable. So it's kind of like when I see some of these things, I'm like, if that's what you got to do, Apple, to get the young people on board, please do, because I want, you know, I don't want to become the BlackBerry of, you know, mobile phones. And I don't have an analogy for the Mac version, but they do a good job of being kind of like, you know, kind of cool, at least, you know. It kind of seems like they're always lagging a little bit, but they're like way ahead of any other like huge multinational computer hardware and software company, right? Like they're lagging Snapchat, but they're like way ahead of Microsoft or, yep, you know, a lot of other companies, really. Dell for sure, right?
Yeah. Well, they've said a couple times, you know, the messages it's the most popular app, period, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess maybe we could have seen that coming, kind of, but, like, when the iPhone was announced, you kind of did think you would use it more as a phone, maybe, than anything else, and that's, you know, I would be, yeah, messages, you can clearly see that, like, everybody uses that.
Right.
And so it should keep up with the times.
And what a boon to them that so many of us use it to message other people on iPhones, right? It's like, it really does kind of cut the carrier out I think you're much more likely when you're messaging with your family or your friends, you're much more likely to kind of happen to share the affinity for Apple stuff. So that messages to messages thing, I think, works for Apple a lot of the time.
Yeah, I think there's something to, it's not exactly lock-in or whatever, but like the fact that messages just continues to get more features for iPhone to iPhone communication. You know, most of the people I know have an iPhone, but like, you know, a couple people don't. And anytime, you know, you message one of those people, it's like you're downgraded to the SMS experience. And this is taking things even further. So obviously stickers and all that kind of stuff are not going to work
right
when you're chatting with an Android person. And I think this is, again, like we had mentioned after Google I.O., Google had the new chat thing. And I mentioned, and I still don't know if this is true because I don't think it's out yet, but I had said that it was going to be a little more like iMessage possibly in that it was tied to your phone number. And so you could use one app for SMS and the more more kind of advanced chat things. And that's just something that Apple has just pulled off really well, like transitioning from the app just has SMS to it seamlessly has a much richer experience if you're communicating with iPhone people. And of course, one of the features that didn't pan out, or one of the rumors that people thought was going to happen, is iMessage for Android. They didn't say anything about that. And I don't know, maybe we'll still see that, but it doesn't seem like any hurry for that.
Yeah, I could see how that would be an example of something they could release like a month later or 2 months later and kind of have it be like in the noise. Because the last thing, when I look back at it, the last thing Apple wants to do at WWDC is promote an Android app.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. They're better off just not even mentioning it.
Right.
It's a much clearer message.
I don't think they talked much about music for Android.
I don't think they did, no. The keynote did a great job of, you know, we have four platforms. We're going to spend a little time on each one. We're not going to get distracted from that.
So I have one pitch to all of you out there who have not installed the iOS 10 beta, and it's going to appeal so strongly to some of you, you're going to drop your headphones right now and go run to your Mac or run to your, I don't know how iOS-only people do it, but update to the latest beta, iOS 10. Because I was walking down the street and I was listening to a podcast and I needed to take a picture of something. And so I opened the camera. And of course, my podcast stopped, right? No, it did not stop.
All right. Nice improvement.
iOS 10, baby.
All right.
This is the kind of thing that Apple has trained us to be excited about.
Yep. That's okay.
All right, folks, we're happy to have back sponsoring the show our friends at Linode. If you need a Linux box to host a website, a private Git repository, or maybe to serve as a backend for your latest iOS app, consider Linode Cloud Hosting. They've been doing infrastructure as a service since 2003. They give their customers free upgrades, and they have 8 global data centers equipped with industry-leading data center-grade SSDs. Now, the deal with a service like Linode, and Linode is basically the best at this, is they give you root access on your own virtual machines. So you get full access to everything. On top of that, you get precise billing for exactly what you use, and you can set a monthly pricing cap so you never go, you know, way beyond. If you get fireballed or something, John Gruber links to your site and you get way more attention than you ever expected, you can set a pricing cap and you don't get charged more than you expected. There's all kinds of add-ons for load balancing, system metrics, backups, and they have great support. Now, one of the things that Linode folks are, I think, most proud of is that you can actually get a server running in under a minute. And I encourage you to go to linode.com/coreint and take them up on their challenge. See if you can get a server running in under a minute. And while you do that, use this promo code, CoreIntuition20. That will get you $20 off. And essentially, with their basic plan starting at $10 a month, that's equivalent to getting 2 free months with this great service. So once again, go to linode.com/coreint and use the promo code CoreIntuition20 and get full control over your virtual machines for hosting your website, private Git repository, or a backend for your iOS app. Thanks to Linode for sponsoring the show.
It's great to have them sponsoring the show. The best thing I can say about Linode is that I use it. I've been using it. All my app servers are there. CoreIntuition jobs board is there. And I've never once, you know, in the last year thought, oh, I should switch somewhere else. Very happy with their service, their support, their features. And again, you know, as Daniel said, it is really easy to get started. And you can try it out. You can use the coupon code. You can fire up an instance. You can delete it, you know, get a refund for what you haven't used, or, you know, just by the hour. I mean, it's super straightforward and simple to get started. Can't say enough good things about it. So thank you, Linode, for sponsoring the show. Again, the coupon is CoreIntuition20, and just go to linode.com/coreint.
So Manton, you're back home. You're in Austin, back in, I would normally say, your home office. Well, you are in your home office right now.
I am.
That's
right now.
Actually true. But you never know where Manton is these days, because he is a man about the greater Austin area, not because he is traveling to various coffee shops or libraries. He's done with that. That's the old Manton. Now, you got a co-working space, which we talked about a couple weeks ago on the podcast. And are you back? Have you settled back into town? And is that habit persisting, or did you just kind of fall back into your home office deal?
It's persisting. I mean, it's my goal was, yeah, before I was working any random coffee shop or wherever, my goal for the summer was to have one place that I would consistently go a few times a week, not every day, and, you know, still have some flexibility, but at least a few days a week, a place to go to really focus. And so I signed up for WeWork, as we mentioned, and they're all over the country. And this was actually interesting in San Francisco, because I mentioned in my hotel room I had no desk, and I actually had to do a little bit of work. For one, I had to like edit and fix the show and get it out. And it's, I was using my iPad, and just, I needed a real desk to sit at. And so WeWork has locations all over the place, including a few like just really close to, you know, where my hotel was in San Francisco. And so I walked over there and like reserved, you know, I can use a shared desk for the day. And that was actually great. I was really happy with the fact that I had that kind of available, and I could go somewhere that wasn't just Starbucks or someplace. Although if I'd known how nice the new Apple store was, maybe I would have tried that. I ran into Jason Snell in the Apple store when he was wrapping up doing some writing. And, you know, it's like, I don't know if you had a chance to visit the new Apple store in Union Square, but it's amazing. And there's a nice space where you can just kind of hang out and work or check your email or whatever. But that worked out really well in terms of the co-working. And this week I've been commuting, strange, but commuting downtown in the morning. And I think it's going to be good. I think it puts me in the kind of right mindset for like, I'm in an office, I'm doing work now. And just still sorting out some of the details, like where to park and things like that. But I'm trying a few different things, and you know, so far so good.
Well, they'll gradually turn you back into a human being who is suitable for regular work, right? It's like they're pulling you out of this office. For years and years, like 13 years, you worked for a company that you worked from home for. Right?
Yes.
Was it 13 years?
14 and a half.
14 and a half, to be precise. and then, like, Manton went indie, and I was, like, on this slow progression. He's like, first, I'm going to go to every library in Austin. Now I'm going to go to every cafe. I know I got the order wrong there. Now I'm going to go to a co-working space that I have to commute to. And find parking. You're reacclimating to society after being in prison.
It's something. I mean, I don't know if this is going to last past the summer. I knew for the summer I thought I needed like kind of like a semi-permanent place. And you know, it's, again, it's like there's something about getting out of the house sometimes that I just find the changing the environment kind of inspiring, you know. Yeah. Even if it's just different, any just kind of different environment, and especially a place like this, which is, you know, well designed and has all sorts of perks, like, you know, free coffee and good Wi-Fi and a view of downtown and, right, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we'll see how it goes. I do feel like it's been almost a year now since I've been full-time independent, and I want to take advantage of that as much as I can. Like, I've always worked at home, like you said, but even when you're working remotely for like a quote unquote real job, there's still a expectation that you're going to basically be working, you know, 8 to 5, kind of like you'll be at your desk and available like normal hours, and, you know, you'll be working with people. And I still work with people, but the expectation is a little bit different. And I want to have as most flexible, you know, work schedule as I possibly can. But sometimes that means going somewhere and focusing and working really hard for a certain amount of time. And as summer was starting, I was feeling like quality, productive hours were kind of slipping away, and I needed to really focus because I'm at a kind of, I feel like I'm at a pivotal time here as I'm wrapping up the first year of being independent, where I need to actually execute on things that I wanted to ship like 6 months ago. And it's not going to happen unless I make kind of some drastic changes to be productive.
Mm-hmm. Boy, it's that's impressive, Manton, that it's been almost a year and I feel inadequate just thinking about the fact that it's been almost a year since you went indie, because that just feels like a couple months ago to me. And this is the problem of being in charge of your own destiny is, boy, there's a lot to do, and time can fly by. And sometimes I am really appreciative of that, and I like the way you're talking about this. Like, hey, I have the freedom to. It's like a step above, like the freedom to work at home. The freedom to not work at home is as well. Right. Like,
right.
It's like the freedom. You have the freedom to work away from a cell phone if you want to. You have the freedom to work away from chat or Slack or anything. You know, obviously, you need to be accountable to your clients when they need to be in touch with you. But that is one of the things I think that those of us who are indie or aspire to be indie need to remind ourselves is, you know, you obviously still have obligations and commitments, but you really set the standard for when you are on the hook. And yeah, you can work at the Austin Public Library, you can work at a cafe, you can work at WeWork, you can work in a WeWork in San Francisco, you can work on a makeshift desk in a hotel in San Francisco, you can work on a road trip with your family up the California coast, you can work in New York City. And that kind of gets at the heart of it, I guess, that, you know, that's all stuff that some people are lucky enough to do even in a normal job, but a lot of people aren't. And I need to hear this kind of stuff and tell it to myself, because I'm at that stage right now where I'm kind of like, I've been indie for so long. Here in my part of Boston, a little suburb called Arlington, we have a bunch of Google employees. And I saw somebody on the playground at the school today wearing a Google jacket. Now it's just like, I was just like momentarily, I was just like, I just want to go get on that train, go down to Google, just knock on the door and say, I work here now. Hmm. And go in and sit at a desk and like be there at, you know, 9 a.m. every morning. Hmm. And it was like when the uncertainty of indie life gets to you, you can be kind of like, you know what, just take me, put me into that well-established place that invades people's privacy and let me do my job.
Huh. Interesting.
that'll get me the job, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating because, I mean, we've talked a little bit a couple times about how sometimes you're on the fence about, you know, long term, you're going to stay independent forever or not. And I think everybody mm-hmm. goes through that. There's kind of cycles where we've seen a lot of independent developers kind of, a lot of them get hired at Apple, which is kind of like a unique case, right? And you've kind of been there, done that already in a way. But a lot don't. A lot get hired at other like larger consulting firms or other companies. For me, I can't see ever having that desire to like go downtown and knock on Google Store or somewhere else. I mean, luckily, there's some great companies in Austin that would be really fun to work at, that have amazing offices and good people. I would have to be in really bad shape to do that, to even go in for an interview. I would have to, like, financially, you know, things would have to not be working out at all. And, you know, basically my wife would say, this isn't working out at all. Go get a job. Yeah. Right. Which she's kind of, you know, she's hinted at times. That hasn't been totally perfect the last year. But for me, it goes back to like what you said when you're like, you know, working from, you know, road trip, going up the California coast or from New York. I mean, my goal is really to do what I love to do, to have a flexible schedule and to be able to travel a lot. I mean, I love to travel. And the only thing holding me back from like working, you know, 9 months out of the year, like on the road, is the fact that that's completely incompatible with having kids and school schedules and things like that. But I want to do more of that. And being independent makes it just a lot easier.
Thank you for the reminder. You know, the most alluring thing about an office like the Google office or the Apple office, if you're in the Bay Area, or Facebook for that matter, Twitter, San Francisco, lots of great offices to work in. The most alluring thing to me is it's just like going into this like fishbowl of brilliant people,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And there's something to be said for that. And sometimes I worry that I took myself out of the fishbowl before I absorbed enough, wisdom.
Really?
Well, you know, I don't know. I feel pretty confident in myself, but yeah. I feel sometimes like I could almost use like a refresher course. Like,
interesting.
If I just went like, and I, you know, we get a lot of exposure these days to people by reading blogs or being in chat groups or following people on Twitter. But there's a sort of like intimacy of working on the same problem that I don't think you really even get it in open source in most cases, because there's something about like, I was never like a big fan of pair programming, but there's something about hovering over the same computer terminal or, you know, screen and working on the same problem that I think is unreplicated in open source that takes place over the internet or in Stack Overflow or in a chat room or on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I had that experience, and maybe I had enough of the experience to sort of like get me going. But I think that's the one thing that makes me wonder sometimes if I should get like a refresher course. Maybe that's just like being a consultant somewhere or something like that. But you make a lot of great points. You know, I often think now if I were to like actually take a job and go in and say, okay, we're good, I'm going to work here 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week, that I would suddenly start noticing all the things that come up. Like, oh, I'm going to go drive up the California coast. Oh, no, you're not. Like,
right.
Like, you have a job. or you know, like, I mean, it's not always happy stuff either. Like, years ago when my grandmother died and I was like, oh, it's Thursday. I mean, I know a compassionate boss would have let me go,
right.
But to not even have to ask a compassionate boss to just go.
Right. You definitely have to. I mean, there has to be the right kind of company. If you're used to having that flexibility, yeah, it's got to be a great company that maybe they don't micromanage vacation time. And great, I mean, you know, you read blog posts all the time from, you know, startups and about company culture. And I mean, that's part of like, the companies have changed a lot in a way in the last 10 or 15 years too. Like a lot of startups and a lot of companies who are investing heavily in making sure their employees are happy, they're not going to like, yeah, they're going to be like, go for it. You know, go on the vacation, go, you know, the value, the importance of time off and to take care of family things. But it's still, yeah, it's still a little different. I think there's also an interesting thing. Like if you did go back to like a regular job, you talked about learning from other people. And it's kind of funny because like in a lot of ways, if you went to, let's say you went to a Mac company, like you would be like the senior Mac person, right? You wouldn't be like an intern learning from someone. Now that doesn't say, you know, you're not going to learn something. I mean, I'm constantly impressed with people that are much younger than I am, how much better programmers they are than I am. You know, I can learn a lot from them. But in terms of like being a senior developer, you would have so much experience. It would be kind of interesting. I don't know if I'm making that up or if that's perfectly normal, but it just seems a little, I don't know, there's something interesting about that, right? It's like you have all this experience, but you haven't been working in a normal job for a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you're coming in like, here I am, you know, I've got 20 plus years of Mac experience, but like, I want to pair program with someone who's, you know, 22 and learn from them too. You know what I mean? And I'm not making fun of it. I'm really just kind of thinking through because like I said, people that are a lot younger, they have a lot of free time. And in many cases, I've noticed that they have totally surpassed me in terms of like many fewer years of experience, but much better programmers or designers.
Yeah, because they've had the privilege of learning in an era when resources for learning were so much better, right? I'm not resentful about that. I don't think you are either.
No.
It's an interesting thing. Yeah. And you can always spot this is the fun thing about getting old, is you can start to spot the difference between skill and judgment, right? Like you know how to do that, but you don't know what to do with it. And sometimes is the not trying to be too cocky about that, but like, as a younger person, I think I never really appreciated it. Like, okay, you know, let's just say like you memorized back in 1995 when I was vying for a job at Apple, if I had like memorized all the A-traps for programming a Mac, right? That would be impressive. It would be like, wow, this kid doesn't even need to look up the A-traps. Like, I never knew how to do that. Like, this kid can just like, he's like, I want a new handle. I'm just like, A, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, okay, that facilitates something. But what am I going to make with that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what am I going to build with that? And it's like, oh, this kid knows the perfect mixture for making cement. Like, doesn't even need to use like a reference, just like always pours the right amount of cement and the right amount of water. And it's like, okay, well, what are you going to build with that? And I think I feel like there's that, maybe I'm kidding myself, but I feel like, Manton, that's what you and I and a bunch of our other mature peers, what we have is that we have this like, okay, we've been around the block a few times. We know a few things about what works. We picked up other skills, like some amounts of like UI design, marketing, all this other stuff. And there are some things I think you can't learn quickly still. There's some things you have to learn slowly.
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of things that you kind of, like UI design is a good one. Like, use the Mac for 20 plus years or whatever. You instinctively know certain things. And you maybe don't appreciate that you know them better than everybody else. But they're just, you know, if you see something wrong, it's like, okay, that's completely wrong. You just know. And that's not something you really think about when you're, you know, jotting down like a list of items to include on a resume, you know, a couple years of Swift experience and blah, blah, blah. But when you're actually come to working with people, you notice that.
Yeah.
Oh, not everybody kind of instinctively gets like the way things are supposed to be. And it's hard. Yeah. It's hard to like point that out or think about it or just like acknowledge that that's a difference, but it is like you accumulate all this stuff in your brain over years, and every once in a while it'll come in handy. Maybe not every day, but every once in a while it's like you'll be able to get from nothing to the answer much faster and with fewer iterations.
That's the dream, Manton. Let's just keep working towards it. Let's just keep believing it until it's true.
Right.
Yeah, so folks, we're talking about jobs, talking about how Manton and I are never getting a job, but that doesn't have to apply to you. And if you need a job or you need to hire somebody, a great resource is jobs.coreint.org. That's the first place I think I'll go if I finally break down and decide to go get a job, because there's some great companies up there. And please check it out if you haven't already or haven't recently. So I think that's about it for this week's show. Manton, anything you want to add this week before we sign off?
No, there's so much probably from WWDC that we still haven't really covered. We're just kind of going from one topic to the other, and of course the stuff we're working on. So yeah. We'll wrap up more of that over the coming weeks as I get up the courage to install some of the betas.
Yeah, well, I'm going to find some more crazy stuff to install. I'm going to install the Apple TV OS, and I'm probably going to install, I don't know, something that controls my calculator or something that I didn't even know Apple had released. I'm going to install a beta car OS before they release a car, but it should all work out in the end. So anyway, great talking to you again, Manton, and everybody out there. We'll catch up with you next week.
All right, see ya.